This training track, A Global Church for a Global World, City Impacting Churches for All Nations, Session 2. Using the City to Reach the City by Adrian Holloway and Adrian Warnock was recorded at the New Frontiers Together in a Mission Conference 2009 in Brighton.
Hope you slept well. We'll punish the latecomers by starting a few minutes late. Welcome again. I don't think I've done a seminar track where I've created such a massive gear change that I've managed to create this morning. Hopefully you'll see a little bit of sense in the madness. Part of reaching a city is so diverse, and you need, you know, what we had yesterday was trying to give you a little taster, those who are in a city or those who are wanting to get involved in more urban life, of the diversity. And I hoped in the little comments I made to show you that it can be topsy-turvy as well, that proactive can actually cause a reaction in other communities, and I think Steve said the same. So I thought yesterday was great. Did you not really appreciate the diversity? But of course, if we're reaching a city, it's not just about multiracial and cross-cultural and social strata and all the complexities there. But actually, we want to reach people and we want to contact people. And I would say I've been in Manchester now 15 years, and one of the challenges I've found is, how do we tell people we're around? You know, then the bigger the city or the bigger the area, the harder it actually is. You know, you can't do a leaflet drop. We've done one or two of those in a little area just recently for a family fun day. When the local little newspaper told me how many leaflets we needed to do to actually get to this area, my mind was blown. And I said, I want to put 15,000 out. And I thought, you know, it sounded quite a lot until he showed me what that meant on the map. And it was just like embarrassing. I just felt, okay. But talking to Adrian last summer, I realized that, you know, we could use other skills to actually help get our message out there. Now, that's not to everybody. And one of the things that I'll probably pick up and comment on is, again, all like yesterday, you're kind of touching bits. Today, when we're looking at some of the ways that we can use blogs and things like that to get our message out, obviously not everybody is on internet and stuff like that, but more and more people have access to media, and I just wanted Adrian in particular to just open our eyes a little bit to how it's really transformed us in East Manchester. Just a few-minute conversation, I can honestly say, has just helped us set our websites up and do many things that has really, really helped us. And I've known Adrian Holloway for many years. And, of course, it's no good getting your message out if you're not getting people saved, okay? It's no use kind of getting people in and doing some good stuff if actually we're really not cutting it to see salvation. That's the ultimate game, isn't it? That actually, we're in the cities to change hearts, to change society, to build church, to transform the culture, to bring glory to Jesus. And so, effectively, today is just to put that in to the mix. So, Adrian Warnock's going to start, and then Adrian Holloway will carry on, and then we'll take questions. And we'll even take one or two from yesterday if you want to, because one or two guys here, you know, if there's something that you want to pick up. Is that okay? Lord Jesus, I thank you and bless you for your goodness and your mercy that follows us all our days. And we pray today in particular we will know that goodness and that mercy and that kindness and that presence in Jesus' name. Amen.
Okay. Well, I'm speaking just before Adrian Holloway, and I guess it makes me feel like I need to make a personal confession, really, which is I don't feel I'm very good at personal evangelism. Anybody else like that here? But what's actually was really encouraging for me in the last few months was that I actually managed to get somebody I'd met, it was actually somebody I'd met through work, to go to church. And I thought, yeah, go Adrian, you know? The only problem was it was in Seattle. I was like, no, But actually, I think in a funny sort of way, that story does portray some of the problems we face with cities, in that actually sometimes people might, maybe not on the other side of the world, but they might live on the other side of the city as well. And so, you know, you do have that issue sometimes, that you're not just looking at building your own church sometimes, but you're also looking at the influence that can go out to the ends of the earth as well. And so I think with what I'm going to talk about today, I want to talk about very specifically what's happened in Jubilee Church, my church. I'm going to earth it because I think it's helpful to do that. But actually, you know, we're aware that the influence that we're looking at is an influence that goes around the world. And so actually, you know, what you guys do on your internet sites, you know, might actually help us or somebody else in another country. And that's an exciting thing that I don't think we perhaps always think about enough. I want to just tell three stories, actually. And they're all stories connected to Jubilee. The first one is just of a couple. And a few years ago now, they faced some issues with their church, and they were looking for a new church. And you know, it was good reasons, really, why they were looking for a new church. And but they couldn't find one. They didn't know where to go. They didn't know where to look. And then one day, the wife was going shopping at Tesco's. And on her way out of Tesco's, she saw a billboard. And on that billboard was something that looked, I think, to her, sort of attractive, interesting. She saw the Alpha logo, I think, on that one. And she thought, oh, you know what? I'll ring them up. I'll go along. Well, that couple are still with us, and they're one of our small group leaders, and that's great. Wouldn't have come if it wasn't for our billboard. I want to tell you another story. There was a chap recently. We were actually meeting in a cinema ourselves, a little bit like this, and he came in up the door there, and it was before the meeting started, and he sat down, and he looked quite emotional. You know, the guys were doing the rehearsal, and he looked quite emotional already. So I just went over, had a little chat with him, and I said, oh, what's what? And he said, well, my life's a mess, he said. You know, and he talked about how, you know, when he was younger, you know, a lot younger, perhaps as a kid, he'd gone to church, but it was 20 years since he'd been in church. He said, and this has happened, that's happened, the next thing's happened. He told me all these things that were going wrong in his life. And he said, and this week I thought to myself, I need to get sorted with God. And he rang his parents, who were in a different part of the country, and said, well, I think I need to go to church. Where can I go to church? They'd been praying for him for years, of course. What did they do? They went on to Google. They did a little search. They found a few church websites. They found our website. And I think they were able to watch a couple of sermons or listen to a couple of sermons. And they thought, ah, yes, that's the place I want to send him. So he walks in. Throughout the whole meeting, tears were streaming down his face. He didn't stand up. He didn't sing. He just stood there crying. The next Sunday he came back. He wasn't crying anymore. He wouldn't have come if it wasn't for the internet. And then the final one, I want to just read really one of many emails that we've received over the last months and years. And this is quite touching, I think. I came along to your church today. First time back to church for 6 years since I left my ex-wife and felt my church life was over. Right now, I'm going through the most difficult events ever. And after a text from a Christian friend of mine out of the blue, interesting, that text. The very day after I laid in bed praying for forgiveness and asking God for guidance and help, I knew I needed to get my church life and Christian life back in order. Last week I found an excuse not to come. This week my desire to come and deal with my issues was stronger and my alarm was set. When I arrived, I was greeted by Toppy himself. And it was interesting actually, because this chap, along with many others, I think when he greeted Toppy on the door, said, I know you, because he'd seen the website. He felt like he already knew us. I was greeted by Toppy himself and then sat down quietly thinking, am I in the right place? Will my relationship with God ever be the same? I searched the internet for a lively church near where I live. A few came up, including yours. I had seen an advert for your church about a year ago when at the cinema. And I think that's a really interesting point about some of these publicity issues that we're going to talk about. You know, you can put some publicity out sometimes and think, well, nothing's happened. But sometimes it takes a year, 2 years, 3 years. And that's not an uncommon thing for someone to say, actually, when they come to us. Oh, yeah, I saw an advert about a year ago, 2 years ago. The first few songs confirmed that the church was lively enough for me. I love that. No sign of hymn books. Then after a few great songs, a lady spoke of a vision. Wow, everyone in the church disappeared, and this lovely lady was speaking directly to me. God knows you're here. He knows you're hurting and broken. He's right there with you in this place. 30 seconds into her speaking, the tears were streaming down my face. Luckily, I had long sleeves on to mop them up without making a fool of myself on my first day. I just wanted to say, I will be back next week. Thanks. Already feeling like my healing process has started. That's what it's all about, isn't it? And when I, you know, read stories like that or hear stories like that, I sort of think, well, why are we sometimes, you know, a little bit reluctant to get the message out and to be, you know, doing publicity? And I think sometimes, you know, there are good reasons for that. I think we want to be a bit humble. We don't want to be self-promotional. We don't want to appear like, well, basically, we don't want to appear like the televangelists, do we? You know? And yet, I think there's a philosophy of ministry issue here, really. Because these media are very powerful, whether it be billboards, whether it be newspapers. We'll talk a bit about all these things, but obviously I'll focus on the internet. They're very powerful. I mean, look at what happened to Susan Boyle. Incredible, really. Driven not by the TV, not by a newspaper, but by YouTube. And I think what we need to realize is that we should not abdicate these media and leave them for the devil to use. You know, we need to grasp the opportunity. We need to have a desire to get the message out there, you know, by any means. I mean, Jesus said this. He said, a city set on a hill cannot be hidden. You know, and nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. And in the same way, let your light shine before others. And I remember a few years ago when, as a team at Jubilee, we were talking about some of these issues, and we were like, it was funny, there was a sort of phrase that was going around. We kept meeting people who lived next door to us, didn't know we were there, and we were like, no more. No more. No more should somebody be able to live in Enfield without knowing that we're there. There has to be some way of getting this message out. And I'm not saying we're there, I'm not saying we've arrived on that, because actually we still have people who arrive at our church saying, oh, I only heard about you last week, I've lived here 10 years. And you're like, how can that be? But we have decided years ago, really, that we needed to have a change of approach, not attitude. So we still want to keep that humble attitude, we don't want to lose that, but what we want to do is have a bold, go-get-em approach. Humility does not require that we hide ourselves. Amen? And make it as hard as possible for people in your town to find you. Which I think is what we do sometimes. You know, we used to meet in a school that was kind of round a one-way system and sort of hidden away from a main road. And, you know, you had to have a map on your publicity. And, you know, it was hard. And many people don't want to go to a school after they've left. It was not a very attractive place for them to come. We live in a global village, and that will have a big impact on how we approach some of these things, especially on the internet side. And I think, talking of the internet, in many ways, people talk about the internet as the new printing press. And, you know, people used to say of the printing press when it was first made, oh, it's just some little trinket, what's the point? But, you know, Martin Luther nailed his theses to the wall. And that could have been it. But actually someone copied them down and made them into a leaflet that was then reproduced and went all over Europe. And I don't think any of us in this room would have heard of Mark Driscoll if it wasn't for the internet, to be honest. I will talk now a little bit about the difference between city church and village church or rural church or perhaps just small town church, suburban church. Because I think, you know, we tend to think sometimes of the rural church setting, you know, a lot of, or at least the sort of small town setting. And in a small town, you know, your building can really be the centre often. You know, you can buy a building, maybe right in the centre of town, or on the high street, or near the high street at least. Everyone will have to drive past it. Everyone will see it. Everyone will recognise it. They'll probably want to come in and use it as a playgroup or something. And your church building can become a community centre with people going in and out. And that can happen even in quite a substantial-sized town, actually. But in a city, not so much. Also, There are tight social circles in the average small town or village. People know each other. There are communities that are there. And the word of mouth is absolutely critical in spreading news about your church. Community is a strong value for them, even among non-Christians, actually. So, you know, you say, come into our community, and they're like, oh, yeah, we know what community is. That's good. We'd like that. But when you're talking about a city church, the truth is that there are very few high-profile buildings. I mean, what's the most high-profile building in London? Well, I don't know, Westminster. I don't think we can perhaps use that, you know. And if you were going to go for the high-profile buildings, the cost is often prohibitive, certainly to buy. And so I think for us, and I know for Adrian, who's going to be speaking after me, you know, in our churches, we had to sort of look at that. And, you know, we've landed on the decision that, you know, at least for now and for the foreseeable future, we're going to use buildings that are already existing. So we use a cinema and they use a theatre. And those are buildings that function throughout the week. People gather to them throughout the week. They are part of what some people call the third space, you know, where you've got the first space where you live, the second space where you work, and the third place is where you want to be. And trust me, on a Friday night when there's a new movie out, you know, Enfield Cineworld is where half of North London, it seems, wants to be. And it's wonderful to see queues for church on a Sunday morning now. Word of mouth is still important in the city, actually. And I don't want to negate that with all that I'm going to say. Actually, it's still true to say that a number of our people actually come because they were invited. But actually, what's interesting is it's not an either-or thing. So you find sometimes someone will have seen some publicity, and then that makes it easier for you to come. Or actually, even, it can help your people because they... Maybe they're at work, and their work colleagues kind of half know they go to church, you know? And then they'll come in, and this has happened to some of our people, and say, so, that thing I saw in the newspaper, is that your church? And it's then almost like they're doing half the work of the evangelism for you, actually. The non-Christian, I mean, and you can actually... And in actual fact, actually, I should say as well, when you raise the publicity areas, what you can sometimes find is non-Christians do the evangelism for you. I mean, I talked to somebody new recently at our church, and I said, so how did you hear about Jubilee? It's always a great question to ask people, you know. How did you hear about it? He said, I went into the estate agent where we were renting a house from, and I just asked the person behind the counter, did they know of any Bible churches around? And they said, oh, yes, I think there's one that meets in the cinema. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? The other thing, though, is so basically the issue is you can live right next to the church and not know it's there in the city. Also, actually, interesting, when it comes to community, what we're finding more and more and more is that many people that first come to us actually want anonymity. You know, it's very easy to join a crowd. It's actually not so easy to join a family. I was thinking that last night as we were hearing what Terry was saying, and wonderful, and that is the goal, of course. We want to draw people into our community. But I think one of the reasons why we do need large churches in the city is that there are many people that, at least initially, sometimes for as much as 6 months or a year actually, want to just slip in at the back, slip out as soon as the meeting's gone, and actually they don't want to connect. It's going to take a long time before they begin to trust you. And yes, of course, we're trying to work to connect them. But actually, you know, to have a crowd that someone can come and go in first for a while, but all the time hearing, you know, oh, actually, there's something else I'm missing out on here. You know, there's small groups, there's this, there's that. We need to, you know, draw people in. But that anonymity is actually more important than we think. And I think there's a danger that if you live in a village, you might listen to everything we're saying and say, oh, well, I've got to do all of that then. Now, it's true that, you know, there is a global world, even for the village, so some of these things might apply. But equally, you can't really apply completely a city mentality to a village any more than we should apply a village mentality to a city. Now, what about publicity? When it comes to publicity, I think one of the key things that we've learned over time, we've constantly had a temptation to want to reinvent ourselves. And sometimes you put a whole load of hours into a new publicity campaign, and then you look at it and you think, hang on a minute, you know what? Maybe we should just stick with the one we had before. Because actually, you know, there's a consistency and there's a building on that that has been really helpful. Like, you know, for these people that say, well, I saw something a year ago. If a year on they see the next thing and they don't make the connection that it's the same church, that's a bit of a problem. Yeah. And we need a sort of unified, I call it a personality. It's a funny sort of thing, but you're actually portraying an image, you're portraying a picture, so that there's almost a relationship building before they even step through the door. And often you need some kind of a hook, and so for us that's been an informal church or the church in the cinema. The aim is also to facilitate personal invitation, as I've already said, and encourage your members. I tell you, there's nothing quite like seeing your church on the back of a bus or on a billboard to encourage you. And done well, all of these things can portray an attractive picture of what you currently are and what you intend to be. But also done badly, they can either be deceptive, you know, make out that you're something you're not, or they can actually make a good, attractive church look very unattractive, actually. So what does that look like? Well, we've done leafleting, and that is a challenge, as we've talked about already, in terms of the vast areas. We've done buses, we've done billboards, we've done newspapers. So actually, we had a great deal on a wraparound for a newspaper where the front page of the local free newspaper was us, and the back page, and the inside back page. I mean, talk about in your face. It was great. I went into a pub the week after that had gone and just started talking to a random family who was sitting next to me and got talking to them and just said about, you know, church. And they're like, oh, hang on, is that the one that's got Lex coming this Sunday? We wanted to come to that. And it's interesting, they didn't come, but, you know, they'd actually seen it and thought, I'd like to go. Obviously not made the step. TV, we've actually, we have somebody in our church who actually runs a TV station, and we struggled with that one, but we embraced it after a while. We thought, no, we'll do that. Radio, we've not done that, but I know Adrian has, he'll talk about that. And then internet. I'll talk about internet in the rest of my time, but before I do that, I just want to show you our billboard. Look at that. That was great. Now, what about the internet? There are two responses to the internet, and I like this. These media tend to shorten attention spans, weaken discursive reasoning, lure people away from scripture and prayer, disembody relationships, feed the fires of narcissism, cater to the craving for attention, fill the world with drivel, shrink the soul's capacity for greatness, and make us second-handers who comment on life when we ought to be living it. So boycott them and write books, not blogs, about the problem. And that's one response to the internet. But this response is actually written by the same person, and he says this. The other response says, yes, there is truth in all of that, actually. But instead of boycotting, let's try and fill these media with as much provocative, reasonable, Bible-saturated, powerful, prayerful, relational, I like that word, relational. Actually, you can do things relational on the internet. People think you can't, but you can. Christ-exalting, truth-driven, serious, creative pointers to true greatness as you can. That was written by John Piper in a lovely article called Why I Twitter or Why I Tweet. And you can look at John Piper's Twitter account on twitter.com/John Piper, or you can look at his blog. And those guys have really used the internet very well. Now, what about the internet? First of all, making Google your friend, which is what we were talking about with Manchester. I can't really cover this in great detail this time, but you want to get a high ranking for a Google search for church or town. You know, so in other words, Church London or Church Enfield or Church, you know, wherever you're from. But actually, having said that, most of our traffic comes from searches for Jubilee Church, which tells us that people have already seen our publicity. And they get home and think, oh, let me look on the internet. So these things all work together, as I keep saying. Keywords in the title and the external links that point to your site is what's going to help you there. You may need some help with search engine optimization, but beware of sharks who will take your money and do nothing for you. You want to have a blog or a news section or a podcast feed on your site because that really helps with Google. And it's basically links. It's all about links. The more links you can get, the better. Find lists of churches, get your church on it. You know, get links out and links into your site, and that will help you a lot. Using media on your site, most sites now have MP3s, but not all church sites have MP3s. But if you do have them, I think it allows them a catch-up for people who miss a Sunday, your kids' workers. But also, it allows people to preview the church and see what it's about. It allows them to build some sort of relationship with the church before they've even set foot inside the door. It also does give you an opportunity to potentially expand your influence. I mean, we do need to remember, though, we're not pastoring the world. So I think, you must preach if you have three eyes, you know, two eyes on the congregation in front of you and maybe one eye on the people listening on the internet. Or one ear. I don't know. That's a bit weird, but you get what I'm saying, really. I would consider a podcast. Not everyone who has an MP3 uses a podcast. You can use a simple blog piece of software and FeedBurner, I think it is, to plug it into iTunes. I think that's quite helpful increasingly, especially with people having iPhones and such like. And you might want to consider video. If you do consider video, go straight for high definition. Don't bother with the low definition because you'll only wish you had gone straight there in the first place. And it's actually not as expensive as you think. There are two companies that we use. We use Bits on the Run and we use Vimeo. Vimeo has a few limitations, but not many. But it's something crazy like $40 a year. Okay, so that's not too bad. So the biggest cost is going to be your camera rather than anything else. And there we see. This is our video on our site. So you can go onto the site, just jubilee-church.org/video. And you can see a whole bunch of our sermons. You can actually view them online just by pressing the play button, or you can download the video or download the audio. And you can see that actually, you should be able to notice that banner looks very similar to the advert we did for Lex, doesn't it? And we did that on purpose. And that's our Vimeo site, so you can see that looks quite similar, actually. And it would, you know, many ways, if price is an issue, Vimeo is well worth going for. What about social media? Everyone talks about social media. Why do people care about this? Well, there are probably by now it would be over 30 million, because this is December 2008, this figure, 29 million people in the UK using this. I mean, that's a phenomenal number of people. Now, maybe it's slightly overestimated, perhaps, because some of those people might not be using them actively, but I don't know. 80%, though, of UK internet users will be on one of these sites. 80% of UK users will use a social media site or will use social media in some way. People actually do create strong connections with each other and with organisations online. People feel like they know you before they've met you. I have that all the time. It's shocking. On a Sunday morning, they come in and they say, oh, yes, we saw your face on the internet. We know you. And they say that to several of us in the church whose mugshots are on the site or whatever. There is a tension, I think, between a desire to protect one's image, if you like, and the sort of so-called open and personal world of the net. And it can be a little bit annoying when people say things that you don't want them to say about you online. And actually, some of the biggest problems can come from people in your own church, if you're not careful. And I don't mean necessarily negative comments, although that's an issue, but sometimes people can be a little bit overzealous in their sort of praise of you. And that's certainly been a problem for some secular companies, too. Blogs, specifically, they're just a regularly updated website. That's all it is. People get all hung up about a blog. What is a blog? That's all it is. It's a regularly, hear that word, regularly. And regularly can be once a week. It doesn't have to be once a day. Updated. And many people now are beginning to drop the word because some people still think it's a bit odd. It's shortened from the word web log, as in, you know, captain's log, star date, whatever. The potential audience of these is the entire internet community. Anyone can find you if they Google you. You can offer a subscription to people via reader or an email, and also you can tie this into Twitter and Facebook. If you do get into Twitter and Facebook, you can do what I do, which is you write the blog post, and then a little bit of web software called Twitter Feed puts that straight into Twitter as a Twitter status update, and then there's a Facebook application for Twitter that takes the Twitter feed and puts that into Facebook. So that just saves a bit of time and effort. And actually, blogs do help massively with Google rankings, as well as being quite useful. I would personally turn the comments box off, mainly because people can be anonymous in these places, and there's no real accountability. And I've found that in Facebook, people are much kinder than they are on the open web. I think because if they write something about you on Facebook, it appears on their page, not just on yours. And so they're a bit worried about their own reputation. I had to get rid of comments on my own personal blog. But I've not really had a problem with Facebook. Okay, so blogs, there's a specific example of what hopefully my blog will look like fairly soon, a little bit like that. It's a big improvement on what it was. And the guy who's designed that for me can help you if you need some help, and there are plenty of other people that can help as well. Here's another example of a blog. It doesn't really look like a blog, but that actually is a blog, and that's the news section. We're calling it a news section, actually, rather than a blog on our church website. Here's another example of a blog, actually, but this looks even less like a blog. It's actually my lovely wife's photography website, but that actually uses the blog software as well. So if you're wanting an easy way of designing a website, sometimes that can be there. And doesn't she look gorgeous? She's not the... She's
the one there.
what about Twitter? I think sometimes people look at Twitter and think, oh, how will that help my site, my church? But actually, Twitter is a great way to connect with people, build relationships. It's shown 600% growth in a year. There are more than 5 million users worldwide. And it really asks a simple question, what are you doing, but in 140 characters or keystrokes or less, yeah? So it forces people to be brief, which is good if you're a preacher, or hard if you're a preacher. Actually, often the question people answer is not so much what are you doing, but what are you thinking, or what have you found lately that's interesting? And many tweets include a link to an external website where you can read more. So there you go, preacher. You can write a long post somewhere else and put a short post with a headline which actually, you know, draws people in and tells them why they would want to go into your site and read your thing. So, for example, a recent one I saw, which I thought was quite good, was just entitled Why I Shout Whilst Preaching. And that was great because, you know, you read a headline like that and you think, I want to know more about that. So you click on it and you visit the site. There's no advertising yet within Twitter. But you can have a sort of viral spread. I mean, you know, with that one, actually, that was one that Toppy wrote. And we found that it went all over the place. Before we knew it, it was being linked in all sorts of places. Loads of people were Twittering it. But it also appeared on some websites and things. And it's quite interesting how sometimes things can just grab. And so there's a Twitter site. That's what they look like. That's actually Toppy's Twitter site. And then there's a Facebook. So we'll move on to Facebook. My time is almost up. If you want to know where your people are at and what they're thinking and what they're interested in and what they're doing on a Friday night, then if you're a pastor, you probably want to be on Facebook. You might have a few surprises. There are 200 million active members. So, you know, compare that to the 5 million of Twitter. 18,200,000 UK members. I mean, that's a phenomenal number of people. 4.5 million almost, Greater London members. I mean, astonishing. And you have status updates like Twitter. People reconnect with their old friends. They join groups, they join networks, they join fan pages. Then you can create events on there and actually track people's attendance. You can share photos. And my favourite one is you get lots of happy birthday messages from all your friends, which is nice. Here's an example of a Facebook page. Sorry, I've been a little bit cheeky here. This is actually the Facebook page for my future book. Not yet available, but as you can see, there's a list there of members, people who've joined up and are interested, and there's a few bits of discussion going on a discussion board. And then on the right, you'll notice some adverts, and I'll come back to that in just a moment. Facebook adverts, you can actually target by geography on these. I think these are the sort of secret that many people are not really talking about yet, but the smart people are using, because they're not that expensive. You can target them by geography. So we can say, for example, we only want people in London to see our advert or our publicity. You can pay per impression or per click. We pay per click. There is, unfortunately, a minimum weekly spend. It's not that much, but it adds up as you add it on each week. And unfortunately, a bit annoyingly, they charge it in dollars to a credit card, so that's a bit of a pain. But it can help you, get traffic to your website. Okay, so what about next steps? So we're just drawing to close on my bit, and then Adrian will carry on. This presentation will be available on adrianwarnock.com, including Adrian Holloway's slides as well, so you can have a look at that. There's a book called New Media Frontier available in the bookstall, which is quite funny considering we're new frontiers, but there we go. Nothing to do with me, nothing to do with us, but it is quite a useful introduction to this if you want to find a bit more out. You may have in-house expertise that can help you do some of these things, but you may need to consider spending money externally. And if you are, I can point you in the direction of one or two people who might be able to help you, because you need to make sure you choose the right person to help you. But message control is a leadership function. It's not enough to say that leadership are involved in this. You know, maybe you're here and you're thinking, yeah, I want to do internet. Let me just twist my leader's arm. Actually, what you need is the leaders to be not just on board, but to be driving this. I mean, you wouldn't dream of just letting anybody preach a sermon on a Sunday. Many more people will see your website than will hear your sermon. And there are Christian specialists who exist. And really, in conclusion, I just think, you know, by all means, I might save some. It includes billboards, it includes the internet, it includes all these things. If it's legal, you know, if it's moral, let's exploit it. Amen?
Wonderful. Well, the good news is we'll have a chance to ask Adrian some questions at the end. Let me just introduce myself. My name's Adrian Holloway. I'm married with four children, one of three elders at Christ Church London, which is a church led by David Stroud, planted nearly 5 years ago. We currently have around 450 adults in attendance on any given Sunday. Our church meets in the Piccadilly Theatre in central London. That's the home of Grease the Musical. So we are about 100 yards away from Piccadilly Circus Tube Station. I'm going to show you about 40 slides this morning. I'm going to talk about what we've done at Christ Church London to try and reach London. And my hope is that at least some of our ideas will help you reach people wherever in the world you live. But I just wondered if you don't mind just to spend 3 minutes before I get into all of that on big picture stuff. Just want to share three convictions that drove us from day one when we arrived in London in 2004. So here are three blockbuster facts. Fact one, lost people, unsaved people, are so precious to God that he sent his only son from heaven to earth just so that there could be a way whereby lost people could get saved. That's fact one. Fact two, now that Jesus has ascended to heaven, God has launched his rescue vehicle to reach lost people, which is the church. Blockbuster fact number three, in every country, many people live in cities, and in an increasing number of nations, most people live in cities. So if you run those three facts together, you are led to a stunning conclusion, which is that the best way to reach the greatest number of lost people is to plant churches in cities. And in the UK, by far the biggest city is London. So in 2004, we moved to central London to start Christ Church London. So how did we go about trying to reach London? Well, first we took a reality check. So here are three more facts. Most Christians want to do effective evangelism, fact four. Fact five, many Christians don't know how to do effective evangelism. And fact six, many Christians think of themselves as either proven failures in evangelism, or they're the wrong personality type, or they're just too busy, or all of the above. So if we are going to effectively reach non-Christians, we are first going to have to get some kind of strategy that equips, inspires, motivates our own people into friendship evangelism. Because cold contact evangelism will only get us so far. It'll help, but we won't win the city simply by sending messages to strangers. At some point, we're going to have to make friends. So what I'm saying is that there's got to be something in your church that makes people in your church genuinely evangelistic. Now, folks, if the question of how you equip and inspire your church into personal evangelism, that would be a whole seminar in itself. But let's imagine that you succeed in that wonderful task. What's next? I want to give you, in a few short minutes, seven steps in terms of what we did next. Step one, we had a 20-minute witness section in every small group meeting. We currently have 41 small groups or life groups. A 20-minute witness section in every life group meeting where we focused our minds on reaching specific unsaved people in London who we personally know. That was step one. Step two, our goal was to invite these non-Christian friends of ours to a life group social event. And this is just a social event with no gospel content. It's a party, for example. And we invite our friend along, and our friend thinks, ah, your Christian friends are okay. In fact, I'm quite enjoying myself. And that's all we're trying to achieve at a life group social. And then thirdly, we want to invite this friend, a non-Christian friend, along to an alpha launch. This is a free meal with an after-dinner speaker. So let's have a look at some examples of alpha launch events that we've done, and I'm going to spend some time on this just in case something here lights a spark in your imagination. So the first one is actually me. bizarrely enough. This is me talking about my life in sports journalism. I used to be a newspaper, television, radio presenter, talking to or meeting, reporting professional football, premiership football. That was my life for many years. And the whole angle here is all of these guys get to the top of the tree and discover that even though they're incredibly rich and famous, they're not actually particularly happy. And so loads and loads of stories about that. Now, this message particularly connects with people in their 20s who move to London because they've been told up until this point in their life, if you work hard enough, if you pass these exams, if you jump through these hoops, if you get this kind of job in London, then when you arrive, you'll feel fulfilled. So what happens is that they do jump through all the hoops and they do pass all the exams. Now they're living in central London. They've got the right job. They've got the right boyfriend, the right girlfriend. And they've supposedly arrived, and yet they still don't feel satisfied. And so they ask themselves, well, is this it? I'm supposed to feel fulfilled, but all I feel is stressed. And those kind of people ask this question, is there more to life than this? And folks, those kind of people, in our experience, say yes to Alpha. Gary Streeter and David Burrows, two MPs who came along, and the fact is that some people, possibly quite a small proportion of people who move to central London, do so because they genuinely want to change the nation and possibly even change the world. These are non-Christians I'm talking about here. The people who move to London to influence the nation, they're people that we want to influence. There are some people who came along to hear these two MPs who I don't think would have come to any other event that we've ever run. They would only come and listen to an MP. Next, Nigel Scalzi. He was the Sunday Telegraph picture editor for many, many years. Nigel Scalzi starts his talk with a fantastic anecdote. He was known, his nickname on Fleet Street was The Beast. This is before he was a Christian. And he starts his talk with an amazing anecdote about how he's bawling out one of his photographers over a mobile phone call. The photographer is standing next to Princess Diana, and Princess Diana, listening to Nigel Scalzi over the phone, says, "Who is that ghastly man?" And he starts his talk with that. Now, loads of people in London want to be photographers. I mean, you would be amazed at the number of people who want to make a living out of taking photographs. Obviously, only a certain number of them succeed. Here's what interests me about Nigel. When I was preparing for this seminar, and I just Googled Nigel Scalzi, top hit was a non-Christian review online of the film The Devil Wears Prada. And so this reviewer is trying to explain Meryl Streep's character in this film, The Devil Wears Prada. And the way that the non-Christian reviewer tries to explain what Meryl Streep is like is by describing his own experience of going to an Alpha launch and hearing Nigel Scalzi talk about his life before he became a Christian. Now, to me, that's huge, because what I am all about is connecting up culture with Christianity. And as I'm looking at this review of this Meryl Streep film that references Nigel Scalzi's amazing conversion from the beast of Fleet Street to born-again Christian, advocate of Alpha, that's just what's happened in that person's mind. They've connected up their life in culture, reviewing films, with Christianity. Next, Charlie Mackesy. Charlie Mackesy is an artist and is part of Holy Trinity Brompton. How many art students do you think there are in London? I mean, just think of the number of people in cities whose plan A for their life is, I want to not just do art, but I want to do so much art so well that I can actually make a living doing it. Now, of that huge number, only a tiny proportion manage to make a living through their art, and there are literally thousands of artists on plan B or plan C, yeah? But when they're art students, they're still on plan A. So this is a huge event for us. Now, again, just a little anecdote from the talk itself. In the first 5 minutes of the talk, he describes this situation. He's standing next to his own exhibit, which is of two people embracing, I think it's a bronze sculpture, and his friend Bono from U2 walks by. And Bono says to Charlie Mackesy, "Oh, it's the prodigal son, isn't it?" And what's happened in the first 5 minutes of the talk is that Charlie has connected culture, U2, a band of whom everybody has heard, and everybody's got at least one of their albums, with Christianity. What's the medium? The medium is sculpture. That's huge. Right there, that's huge. So that was another great night with Charlie McAtee. Simon Thomas, former BBC Blue Peter presenter. Simon is now a presenter on Sky Sports News, was on Blue Peter for many, many years. He talked about the fascination with fame. He said, look, hundreds or in fact thousands of people write into Blue Peter, but they're not writing and saying, please can I be behind the camera? Please can I be, you know, some kind of producer one day? They all want to be in front of the camera. So he just talked about the fascination with fame that we all have. So he told a compelling story about when he eventually did his first broadcast as a BBC Blue Peter presenter. He, the following day, did the same walk that he'd done every day of his life from his flat in Brixton to the corner shop. And he just wanted to know, is it going to be different today? Like today, seeing as I was on Blue Peter yesterday, are people going to stop me? Is anybody going to kind of look twice when they didn't look before? Is anybody going to come up to me and say, oh, hang on a minute, you're the new guy on Blue, you're the new presenter on Blue Peter, aren't you? So just the sheer kind of tension in the room when he's telling this story about what will it be like, that's something that thousands of people can relate to. We need to ask ourselves, why is it that millions of people watch Britain's Got Talent? Why do people in their hundreds of thousands queue round the block in the rain to audition for X Factor? What is this thing that is happening in our country and in other countries all over the world? It is an obsession, a fascination, a curiosity with fame. And so putting on Simon Thomas event, for us that was a way of connecting up this phenomenon in culture, which was, I want to be famous, with the gospel. And Simon just talking about how he himself became a Christian and what it's like to be a Christian in the media. Jonathan Aitken, former Conservative cabinet member, sent to prison for 18 months for perjury. This is a unique life story. I think it will be a very long time before anybody else ever produces a testimony quite like this one. Jonathan spoke with real authority. That was the second best attended event that we've ever put on in terms of an alpha launch. Next, Richard Taylor. Richard Taylor was a drug addict, a burglar, a gang member, ended up in Swansea prison, got born again. Richard is an outstanding preacher and public speaker. He was the presenter of the BBC TV series To Catch a Thief. This is a BBC One series. I don't know if you saw this. I think the program idea is absolutely hilarious. Basically, you get a middle-class family, and they secure their home as best they can know how. They put all their alarms on, and they go away with the program producers, and they sit and they watch on CCTV as Richard and his mate Michael Fraser turn up. And because they're professional, you know, burglars, or ex-burglars, they're reformed burglars, they find it easy to break into the house. So within 10 minutes, they've broken into the house, they've got the keys, they've driven the car off, they've nicked the car, and then the middle-class family come back and say, oh, how did you do it? Oh, this is awful. You know, how did you manage to steal all our stuff? You know, and they basically then explain how they did it. You know, it's a piece of cake because you left the skylight open. And then the kind of the moral of the program is, you know, your home isn't as secure as you think it is, and here's some handy hints, which people love all that kind of stuff. But for me, this was absolutely brilliant because here we're connecting with a whole load of other people. We're connecting with a whole load of people who Richard Taylor's, you know, we don't just want to simply connect with ABC1 demographic type people. And our church is not entirely made up of them, although many of the speakers we have would fit that demographic. Richard Taylor certainly doesn't. So there's some variety for us. Mark Ritchie is an outstanding evangelist. Ian McCormack. You may well know of him as the jellyfish man, kind of back from the dead testimony. You may well have seen Ian Action. That was another great night. Jamie Hind. He's a West End actor and was in The Lion King. Also TV actor, been on the TV show Doctors. And again, loads of people in central London are trying to make it, you know, in terms of being on stage, being on screen. And there's that sort of huge number of people that genuinely want to make it and be on telly and so on. And Jamie came and did a great talk. That was one of the best nights that we've had. Shane Lynch from Boyzone. Boyzone, I'm sure you'll know, in the 90s were massive. 6 number one UK singles. Gavin Peacock was a professional footballer for Newcastle United and Chelsea, amongst others. He told a great anecdote of something that you could only be able to tell this anecdote if you'd actually played in this game. But he's describing playing in the 1994 FA Cup final, which was between Chelsea and Manchester United. And in the 60th minute, it was 0-0. Man United are awarded a penalty, which Eric Cantona is going to take. And Dennis Wise goes up to Eric Cantona and tries to put Cantona off in a way that only Dennis Wise could. As Cantona's about to take the penalty, and Cantona just comes up with this brilliant put-down comment. I mean, if you know anything about football, Dennis Wise and Eric Cantona are as different as chalk is from cheese. And as he tells this anecdote, he told another anecdote about how he chipped the ball over Peter Schmeichel at Old Trafford. This is a match that Chelsea won at Man United. And just the sort of the, wow, you've been there. You're the real thing. What he was doing in that moment was Gavin was connecting with all of those people for whom football is massive. And just as we should think about why people queue around the corner for X Factor and Britain's Got Talent, we should also think in this country, at least, about the fact that the two biggest football leagues in the world, one of them is La Liga in Spain, the other one is here. You know, it's the Premiership. And it's a multi-million pound industry, and Gavin did a great job on that one. Gary Grant is the founder of a business called The Entertainer. This is a chain of toy stores. If any kind of big shopping centres open near you recently, you'll find that Gary will be there. He is an entrepreneur. He is someone who left school at 16, and through his own genius and hard work, he became a self-made millionaire, but he wasn't a Christian, but his wife became a Christian. He eventually got saved. Again, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, look at the success of TV programs like The Apprentice and Dragon's Den. You know, what's happening there? Why are those shows so popular? Because people think they've got a business idea in them. And they want to see in Dragon's Den, you know, would my idea fly? Or when they're watching The Apprentice, they're thinking, what is it that makes somebody cut it at the top level? So I have friends who pride themselves on the fact that they guess on the first episode of Apprentice which of the different candidates is the one that Alan Sugar is actually going to hire. They'll say, oh, I guessed her on week one. Because people love to test their own innate business acumen against people like Alan Sugar. And so there's this phenomenon. People are genuinely interested at what is it that makes people succeed in business. So Gary Grant speaks to that. He's been tremendously successful. He's also become a Christian, and he talks about running a business on very kind of ethical Christian lines, and his business goes from strength to strength. Mark Stubbs. Mark, this is really quite funny. Mark tried to row from the West Indies to Cornwall. With three other guys in a boat, he tried to break the world record for the fastest transatlantic row, and 300 miles off Cornwall. And you may remember the story because this was a very, very big news, you know, first item on the BBC News at 10. Very dramatic rescue. And basically, as Mark Stubbs is capsized, dying in the Atlantic Ocean, he cries out to a God that he doesn't really think exists and says these words, God, if you exist and you get me out of this, I promise I will go on Alpha. And the very fact that he came to do this talk recently at our church tells you that, in fact, he did get out of it, and he was rescued by helicopter, as were his friends, and he did go on Alpha, and he became a Christian, much to the delight of his wife and kids, all of whom had been through Alpha, all of whom had got saved, all of whom were praying for him. So what's the hook here? Endurance sports. Never before in the history of our world have so many people wanted to throw themselves out of aeroplanes, jump off bridges. I mean, the combination of danger and endurance fascinates me. It is of absolutely no interest to me at all. I want to avoid risk of death. I do not want to endure pain for 3 or 4 hours. I do not want to row from the West Indies to Cornwall. But lots of people do, particularly young people in London, think, oh, wow, you know, that's so cool. You did a triathlon. You did an Ironman. Or, you know, they love this kind of stuff. So, again, that's another way that you can connect with people. Henry Alonga stood up to Robert Mugabe by wearing a black armband. This guy's a test cricketer for Zimbabwe. He and Andy Flower, who's currently the manager of the England cricket team, as you may know, in the 2003 World Cup, very bravely, heroically took the field wearing black armbands to protest about the death of democracy in Zimbabwe. That was a huge decision on Henry's part because he was charged with treason, and in Zimbabwe, treason attracts the death penalty. So basically, there was no way back from the moment he took the field. Zimbabwe actually did very well in that World Cup. In fact, they kept winning, which made his escape more difficult, but eventually he got to England and has lived in exile ever since. This guy, at the age of 27, gave up his career as a professional test cricketer on moral grounds. Why did he do that? Because when he was in the sixth form at school, in school assemblies, the headmaster kept getting evangelicals in to take the assemblies, and he was converted through school assemblies. And he told the most brilliant, I mean, he's the only person I've ever heard who has been converted through school assemblies, but he was, all right? Now, there's obviously different kind of school assemblies to the ones that we had, yeah? Anyway, so he was saved through school assemblies. And when I stood up at the end, as I always do, and I do my 5 minute, now come on, any right-thinking person, any reasonable person would at some point in their life consider the claims of Christ and go on Alpha, and this is a talk, you know, 5 minute wrap-up that I've done hundreds of times, I could do the talk. The reason I couldn't do the talk is because the people would not stop clapping Henry. I tried two times to do my five-minute wrap-up, and they just kept on applauding him. The moral authority that he had gained in the room just by describing what he had done. Now, why is that? Because Mugabe is massive for people in London. There are loads of Zimbabweans in London. There are even more South Africans. People are genuinely outraged. People are emotionally involved in the struggle of Zimbabweans for freedom. And here's a guy that kind of encapsulates everything that they aspire to, taking a stand, this is wrong, thus far and no further, I'm going to stand up and be counted. I mean, it's just incredibly powerful. Great, great bloke, multi-talented guy, brilliant singer, brilliant cricketer, and so on. Jane Rosier, former first soloist with Sadler's Wells Royal Ballet and also Birmingham Royal Ballet. Again, this event, what I loved about this was there's now a group of ballet dancers that have got saved in our church who first came to this event. We call them the Ballet Boys. So that you'll hear them referred to. If you go to a church meeting, you'll hear us talk about the Ballet Boys this, the Ballet Boys that. Because, and one of them, he came up to me at the end of this event on the door, and he says, I can't believe that I've never heard about this before. I can't believe what I've been missing out on. He said, I didn't even know that this event was on until half an hour ago when somebody from ballet school invited me. And this guy, you could just tell that he was going to get saved. This is half an hour after the launch event. He's not even been on the course, but he went on the Alpha course. He went on our follow-up course that I'm about to tell you about. He became a Christian. He got baptized. He's now one of the guys that gives his testimony during the Alpha course for us. So we've connected with a group of ballet dancers that I don't think we would ever have got along had we not got Jane Rosier up. Next, Justice Mark Headley. He's one of the most senior judges in the UK, specialising in family law. This is the biggest and best attended event we have ever done. Why is that? Because we have loads of trainee solicitors in our church. So just imagine you're 23 years old, you're a Christian, you're in Christchurch, London, and you've got a Mark Headley, Justice Mark Headley flyer. You're giving that to a colleague at work. Perhaps you've mentioned that you're a Christian, although vaguely aware you're a Christian. Your colleague at work, let's say they're skeptical about Christianity, they're not going to say, oh, that's so juvenile, that's so lightweight. I mean, I can't believe that you're so gullible as to believe in this Christianity. They're going to think, wow, Justice Mark Headley. I mean, he's one of the most senior judges in this country. The credibility he has just because of what he does and who he is. And it actually quotes, he quotes from scripture in the talk. I mean, at the end, one guy said to me, in fact, no, he didn't say to me, I overheard him say to his friend, I cannot believe there are high court judges who believe in the book of Genesis. And so it's like a complete, my goodness, there are serious intellectuals who have real responsibility in our country who also believe the Bible. Maybe I need to rethink my whole view of Christianity. Woohoo! That is exactly what I'm all about. Maybe you do need to rethink your whole view of Christianity. That is what I'm all about. And so on this, we got a lot of cold contact people. So we stood outside law lectures on Central London campuses and gave these flyers two law students as they left their lecture, and we had lots of them turn up. They walked down the stairs. They knew absolutely nobody, holding the flyer that they'd been given, saying, oh, I got this flyer. Am I in the right place to hear Mark Headley? Now, here's what interests me. This guy is one of the biggest hitters in this country. Two of his sons are in a New Frontiers church. I asked Mark Headley, presumably Mark, you, or presumably Your Honor, you get asked to do this sort of thing all the time. He says to me, this is the first time I've ever been asked to do an Alpha launch event. And I'm just amazed. So anyway, now I've told you about him. You know, to be honest, hey, let me just say, to me, I just don't get it. Why don't I get it? Because anyone at this conference could just go on the Lawyers Christian Fellowship website, on the first page, Justice Mark Headley. Well, why don't you email him? You know, what have you got to lose? I just don't, you know, you've got to just kind of think. You've got to think, hang on a minute, law. Oh, there are Christian lawyers. Oh, maybe there's kind of like an organization like Lawyers Christian Fellowship. Oh, there is. And, you know, it's not rocket science. Lord Hastings of Scarisbrick, CBE. Baron Hastings of Scarisbrick, CBE, is the International Director of Corporate Citizenship at KPMG, which is a massive London firm, former BBC and ITV journalist and presenter, board member of Comic Relief Children in Need, BBC World Service. I mean, this guy is a seriously big cheese. And, I mean, he was absolutely brilliant. He did the most hilarious impression of Kate Winslet that I shall never forget. You know, he just turned up with a copy of The Economist. He picked out four things from The Economist, four news stories, commented on them, brought them round to a Christian angle. It was just masterful. I'll never forget it. So anyway, he's a great bloke. Michael Ramsden, many of you will know, has spoken here at the Brighton Conference in years gone by. And finally, Jeremy Marshall, he is the top man at C. Hoare & Co., which is Britain's oldest private bank. Previously head of private banking at Credit Suisse, told anecdotes about super-rich clients who live in fear of their children being kidnapped, about going hunting with Russian oligarchs, you know, bear hunting, shooting bears with submachine guns, this kind of stuff. Lots of fun. So, again, that's a great thing for all the guys in our church who are working in the city to invite their friends along to. So what am I trying to say through all this? Here's the idea. Whoever your non-Christian friend is, however far away from God they are, eventually Christchurch London will put on an event that is interesting enough and credible enough so that you could genuinely invite one of your own friends along. Okay, so where are we up to? I'm going through seven steps. I spent a lot of time on step three. Here are the seven steps, just to recap. Number one, witness section in life groups, 20 minutes every week, everyone gets involved. Step two, life group evangelistic social. Step three, Alpha launch, which we've just been going through. Step four, of course, is the Alpha course. Hopefully our friend attends these events, they sign up for the course. Nine consecutive Wednesday nights, in our case, in a central London nightclub called Sway. And I'll just comment before I sit down on why we've majored on Alpha, because that's all relevant to central London. Step five, hopefully our friend becomes a Christian on the Alpha Holy Spirit weekend away, or they respond to the gospel on a Sunday afternoon at the theater. We find a lot of our guys, probably most of them, start coming along on a Sunday, and they're already involved in the Sunday thing by their stage. Step six, having gone on the Alpha course, become a Christian, they then go on the Beta follow-up course. Beta is held in the same venue as Alpha. It happens in an adjoining room at the same venue, another nine Wednesday nights. And step seven, at the end of the Beta course, they join a life group, probably the life group that originally reached out to them, or if the life group is multiplied, one of the multiplications. We've got 41 of these life groups, and here's the great bit. When they join the life group at the end of this cycle, this seven-step process, guess what? They get exposed to a 20-minute witness section. We get to hear about their non-Christian friends, and their non-Christian friends get invited along to a life group social, and their non-Christian friends get invited to Alpha, and the whole thing reproduces itself. Okay, what are the results of this strategy? We've had so far 160 people who've become Christians in the 3.5 years that we've been running with this. And we have had 144 baptized. So that is not 160 kind of responses, of which only some have become Christians. That's 160 who've been through a process, they've made a considered decision, they've repented, they believed. In other words, we know where they are. So I'm trying to explain to you in Christian code here that this is a conservative figure that I'm giving you, okay? Let's just think back to the title of this seminar, which is using the city to reach the city. There are some specific things that we've done because we're in central London rather than anywhere else. I want to mention three features of central London life that particularly fit our strategy. First of all, lots of graduates start their first job in London, in central London. These are people who don't own their own homes, so they rent a room in a flat. They often do not even have a communal living area in their home. Now, what is the relevance of that? The relevance is that very few people in Christchurch, London have a home or live somewhere that is big enough to host a small group meeting in. Therefore, most of our midweek small groups or life groups meet in Starbucks or Costa Coffee or some public space. We do not ask those groups to do a public act of worship, because that would be really weird in Starbucks. If all of a sudden, and as we worship Bill, what on earth? You know, we're having coffee, I've just ordered my Americano, and you are singing. That would be strange. Okay, so why am I mentioning this? If you want your life group, your small group, to cover welcome, worship, word, and witness in one evening, every evening, there is a really good chance they're not going to manage to do all four every week. Well, guess which one of those four is not going to get done? Yeah, okay, the last one's going to drop off the edge because it's not, you know, the witness section's going to be lost. So we're at a huge advantage in that because we physically can't do the worship in these public spaces, we're only ever trying to do three. We're only trying to do welcome, word, and witness. What's the result of that? The witness section gets done. That is huge right there. That's huge. Second thing that we've done, specifically because we're in central London rather than anywhere else, because we're in a city, is that the Alpha Course particularly suits non-Christian single people or non-Christian married people who do not yet have children. Why is that? Because Alpha is a midweek, weeknight commitment. So obviously it's going to suit non-Christians who aren't married, because you can come straight on after work for food, you haven't got a wife or a husband to go home to, and on our Alpha course, nobody's gone home before coming out to Alpha. They've all come straight on after work. It's obviously going to suit people who don't have to find a babysitter to come to Alpha. I mean, somebody else is going to cook a meal for me. I'm going to meet some new people. We've already got a winning formula just in terms of food and friends. Before we have even introduced the God and Jesus element into the equation, we are already 9/10 of the way down the road before we've even started. Third thing that we've done, which has really worked for us because we're in a capital city, is the Alpha Holy Spirit Weekend Away is very popular because people who live in central London are desperate to get out of London at the weekends. This is an absolute winner. I have had non-Christians hand over their money to me on week one for the Weekend Away. And I'm thinking, you don't even know who we are. This weekend could be anything. And you are... And why? Because they are saying, okay, here's what you've told me. You told me that there's going to be clean air, that there will be grass, there will be birds, and that you said there are going to be trees. I mean, I haven't seen trees for 2 years. Where do I sign up? I mean, I'm not exaggerating. People sign up on week one. Let me say this from personal experience. There is a world of difference between doing, as many of our churches do, an Alpha Holy Spirit Day, where you try and cram the whole thing into a Saturday, maybe from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. or from 2 p.m. till 8 p.m. And you don't actually go away. You stay in your town, or you even stay in your church building. It's not really a Holy Spirit day away. It's just the Holy Spirit day. There's a world of difference between that and an actual weekend away, where you go away for 3 days into the countryside. And for me, there's a world of difference between those two things. Okay. We arrived in central London and asked this question: is there any church in London that is already winning hundreds of people to Christ? One obvious answer is to look at Holy Trinity Brompton. What's the takeaway from that? I would encourage you, wherever you live, to look in your city or your town. Is there any church where you live that is actually seeing saved and added growth. Because if there is, and you study what they're doing, there's a really good chance that they have contextualized the gospel for that particular culture, suburban culture, urban culture. They've probably been through a process of trial and error over many years before they've hit upon something that works. They probably did a lot of stuff that didn't work, which is worth you knowing about. They have found particular elements in the gospel message that have connected lost people in that town or city with Christ. In other words, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. So look at what they are doing. See if any of it is transferable to you. Here's the good news. You're not obliged to take anything on board that they're doing. You might, for example, have a theological problem with what they're doing. Well, that's great, because therefore don't touch it with a barge pole. But look, because it could be that there's just a method that they are using, even from a theological premise that you don't agree with, a method that they are using that would work for you. Okay, lastly, last 5 minutes, I'm just going to talk about Sundays. Here's a baptism service we did recently based on a Czech language film called Almost. Now, you might think this is a bit bizarre. We found that it's easier to invite a non-Christian along on Sunday to listen to a talk about a trendy Czech language film that was Oscar nominated than it is to say, come to our church on Sunday. You know, in other words, there isn't an end. And it'll be great. You know, I'm sure it will be great. But we've found that if we're able to kind of have this kind of an angle, that really helps. So 2 Sundays ago, I preached on Lost, TV series Lost, the most expensive TV series ever made. 5 years of a whole lot of American actors living in Hawaii. And the angle I took here was, I mean, there are all kinds of angles you can use. All these characters on this desert island are seeking redemption from the misdeeds of their past. They're thrown down, classic postmodern Heidegger idea of thrownness, thrown out the sky, lost, alienated, alienated from themselves, alienated from the others on the island. That's the human condition. That's the postmodern analysis. The common denominator between all the characters is that they've all had terrible relationships with their fathers, which we see in the flashbacks. So I go in on that angle and I preach about the lost son, the parable of the lost son, the prodigal son. On Lost, if you've watched it, you'll know miracles happen on the island, and there's a character called Charlie who has to die in order for all these characters to be saved and to get off the island. I mean, it's almost as if J.J. Abrams has invented a TV series specifically to help people like me preach the gospel. It's like, if you've watched Lost, you'll know, it's like every episode, wow, that's just like Jesus this, or wow, that's just like the Bible that. There's so many angles. I mean, the whole idea is that they're lost and they need to be saved. And there's even a savior, there's even a God character on it called Jacob, who you kind of find out about in series 5. So there's masses and masses of stuff to launch off into. These have proved really popular with our guys. They find it easier to invite people along to this kind of stuff. Okay, radio advertising. We're just talking about Sundays here, is something that we have done. So we have some of our services going out on Premier Radio and also Tube ads. Here are some of the slogans that we've used. Live life together. I'm going to just spin through these. The next one is life need not be lonely. And then we've got history's greatest drama. These photos, incidentally, are real people in our church. God still speaks. God's center stage. And then finally, your local church. Just to explain the relevance of that, that is something you'd see as you go up the escalator at Piccadilly Circus. So as you're going up the escalator, you're literally about to come out of the station. That's meaningful because actually it is the closest church to where you are as you're on the escalator. So it is your local church, as in where you are right now. So we've got loads of people who come along to our church who found us on the internet for the reasons that Adrian's just gone into. 2 weeks ago, I chatted to two people, actually. The first two people I talked to in our kind of welcome area in the stalls bar were people who'd come through Premier Radio. We have got people who've come along as a result of seeing the Tube ads. Okay, in the 1 minute that I've got left, I just want to say something about what we do in terms of welcome team. Because to me, this has been the biggest long-term niggle that I've had where I've just not really understood why we do what we do. It is 10 times easier to retain people who visit your church than it is to get people that have never been to your church to come along out of the blue. And so I've never really understood why we don't put more energy into welcoming people. So when we started Christ Church London, we put our best people in black T-shirts, in welcome T-shirts, And what we do at Christchurch is that we don't just welcome people on a Sunday, but we welcome them over a long period of time, could be 3 months, even 6 months, to a conclusion. And we meet up with them, we contact them on a weekly basis, we meet up with them for coffee and so on and so forth, and we keep in contact, we befriend them until either they say, you know what, I don't want to join your church, I want to join the other church, or I don't want to be part of any church. Or they say, actually, I do want to become part of Christ Church London, I want to join a life group. And the way that that works is after they've attended a life group for 4 consecutive weeks, the welcome team member phones the life group leader and says, Joe Bloggs, who I've been welcoming for the last 9 weeks, tells me that for the last 4 Tuesday nights, he's been coming to your life group. Is that true? The life group leader says, as a matter of fact, it is true. Therefore, welcome team member says, I'm handing over responsibility for Joe Bloggs to you. Is that okay with you? Yes, it's absolutely true. I was expecting you to call. And so everybody who visits doesn't just get lost somewhere in the ether. They either go red or they go blue. They either decide, yes, Christchurch is going to be my church, or they decide it's not going to be their church. And we've put a lot of energy and time. We have about 60 people who are on our welcome team, and their goal in life is to follow people up to a conclusion so that they either join the church or they don't. Okay, those are a few thoughts. So I'm going to hand back to Colin for questions.
Okay, very different from yesterday, yes? I'm a church planter. I'm used to small numbers because I just keep starting new churches. I've probably been involved in 25 new church starts over a number of years. The one thing that happens when you're used to not too many people is you look at pictures like this and you think, that is another world, okay? And I've had Matt Hatchin, who's got a thriving church in Leeds, deliberately this last year to my leadership team and myself to provoke us to believe that even though we keep starting churches and have smaller numbers, we need to not dumb down and lose faith that we can do some of these things. Do you understand? Which is why I was provoked by Adrian. Why I wanted this to happen with to look at these pictures. So you've seen pictures of massive people, haven't you, coming along. You think, well, that can never happen to us. I just believe we've got to see that some of these guys are accessible, okay? And that actually, faith for the cities, okay? And faith to actually think we need to not just link a big numbers, but also a strategy and be in faith for advertising. You know, I'm looking at advertising on buses. I've got it in my heart. Every time I look at my budget and look at my people, I think, no, 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 no. I look at this again today and think, Colin, get back on your knees. Get beginning to talk to your guys again and start thinking. Do you understand that? So part of reaching a city is the faith to lift your head, okay? So I hope that's happened to you, okay? I hope you don't go away thinking, fantastic for central London, not good for me, is good. Second point is that when Adrian said, we do this because... Okay? You know, most of the people I'm dealing with at the moment are dysfunctional, don't understand the left and the right, don't understand what 5 to 10 is and 5 to 9 is and what afternoon and morning is. They get up kind of at bizarre times, bizarre behaviors. I have to think that way. I said to one of my guys, if we're going to get people into meetings, the first thing we have to do is disciple them into getting somewhere. I mean... Points, you know, so it's no use getting bigger speaker if you've got bizarre behavior patterns behind them. But I tell you this, I still want those guys to be connected to key footballers. Do you understand? Because they watch soccer all the time on their television. But I've got to find a way through. Are you hearing what I'm trying to say? So I'm trying to contextualize this, okay? That there's not to kind of forget it and think this isn't for me. To lift your heads and say, we want to reach everybody. Okay, I think that's what Adrian was trying to say, is whatever the people you've got to get them to be reached. I'm trying to say now, let's find a route through, keep working at it. I think we give up too easy. I personally give up too easy. We're now up to 100 on a Sunday. We started with 15, and I'm still thinking 15, okay? I've got a guy on the worship team saying, come on now, get this act together, all right? This is a kicking meeting. We've got to make this work, okay? Do you understand what I'm trying to say? And I'm all the time having to lift my head. So being exposed to people like these guys, I hope, gives you going away and thinking, not just we get a famous speaker, that's not the issue. The issue is we get people that are going to impact the people we're reaching. We get a strategy, hence single people want to get out of the city. I heard that. I registered that point, all right? bizarre behaviour people, that is not quite in their thinking. Do you understand? They want to get up in the morning. But I've got to work. I'm trying to contextualise this. I'm using a kind of complete other spectrum deliberately. A, I'm working in it. B, to help you see that how do I get people for a weekend away? What is the hook? Do you understand? Trees in London is a hook. You know, it might be Blackpool for me, which is kind of, honestly, you know, that would be the hook for a lot of our guys. For me, that's the worst place in the world for me to spend a weekend. It's probably, I thought in my head, that would be the best hook for some of our inner city Manchester guys. You hear what I'm trying to say? So get some principles, lift your head, okay? I want you to really think, wow, we can do it. You know, it doesn't take a lot. And Adrian's just shown you, it costs virtually nothing to get your message out there. One or two questions, very quickly.